This is GamesAtWork.biz, your weekly podcast about gaming, technology, and play. Your hosts are Michael Martin, Andy Piper, and Michael Rowe. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and are not the opinions of any organization which they have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 308.
Meow, 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 meow.
Feline Filters. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on a gamesy at worky busy day with my two friends and wonderful co-hosts, Michael Martin and Andy Piper. Andy, how the hell are you?
I am doing quite well, thank you. I've had a fun day of rest from work, doing some hardware hacking, doing some soldering, and generally, I've got a nice long weekend, and I am going to rest the heck out of that weekend, so I'm good. How are you, Mr. Martin?
You're going to really rest.
I am going to properly rest. Michael Martin, how are you? We're going to throw it across to you. Good.
Doing well, and boy, do we have some fun things to talk about today, don't we, guys?
I don't know, do we?
I think we do. We've got some listener links, we've got some posts, we've got some stuff, and we're starting off with something I know, Michael, you love a lot, which is space.
Pigs in space.
Well, no, not, well, could be. Did they have a lunar lander in the Muppet Show?
The pigs? No. I think they were strictly in space.
That's right, they were in space. they had, what was it, the pork, what was their ship called?
Oh, I can't remember, but it was a pig shaped ship, wasn't it?
It was
pork reference, I'm sure.
Yes, it was Swine Trek or something like that. Yeah. Anyway,
the swine. Yes, it was the Swine Trek. Yes, that was the name of the ship. Yeah, Swine Trek.
Ah, it was. Yes, for the win. We're talking about an AR experience that Apple has tied into for all mankind, and the thing that hit me really fast on this was, how cool is it from a services and entertainment perspective that you're adding more and more and more content that now makes use of Apple devices, capabilities, and latest versions of products to be able to experience more immersively the entertainment when you are stuck at home? Pretty cool stuff.
Well, I actually watched the first season of For All Mankind and loved it, and actually convinced my dad, who recently got a new TV, that had Apple TV built into it.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So I got him to set it up just so that he could watch For All Mankind, which, for those who don't know the story, is an alternate history story of what if the Soviet Union landed on the moon first. And so it's this great premise, has a lot of the, you know, implications of what would happen to the gung-ho U.S. space program that was leading after that, and what would happen if they didn't win. And so it changes the whole history of space exploration for the U.S. going forward. And season two is coming out soon, hence the AR experience. And I think this is really cool. The one thing that I find interesting to your comment, Michael, is it's really showing the power of the platform, because once you buy into the platform, the other features that come out in things like AR added to an Apple TV app, well, you want to have the Apple iPhone because you need to play the AR. And then based off of that, you want to have, you know, the watch because there might be a tie-in there. And you end up getting sucked in, like many of us have over the years, into the platform, into the ecosystem. And I mean, to me, the gateway drug was the iPod, right? Way back in the day, and it just shows you the power. And given that the next area for revenue for Apple is around services, that's getting you into the services ecosystem, and Apple TV is a great gateway with great content like For All Mankind.
What if the Soviet Union had been where Apple was invented?
Then it would be a potato, because it would be a vodka.
Well, it definitely seems unlikely that would have happened, but in terms of Apple and etc. But
and the phone, iPhone, be a lot bigger.
But the thing that interests me about For All Mankind, which has been on my Apple TV to watch list for a while, is that the creator is Ronald D. Moore, who was also the showrunner and creator for the reboot of Battlestar Galactica and various other
things. Didn't realize that.
So there's a lot of deep sci-fi involvement there as well.
Yeah, and it's stunningly beautiful, as you would expect. The end of season one, which I won't tell you about, but I am so excited about season two because we're really diverging now at this point.
I guess cool. you had to start in a common place, yes, and then kind of move, right? So
yes, so you start, you have that one little shift in history,
yeah,
and then you have to diverge, right?
Yes.
So,
I wonder if they had space ice cream in the Soviet Union. I guess I have to watch to see.
Shape.
Right?
Also, potato shape.
The Omega watch, you know, that was first used in space. Lots to check out. It's on my list too, Andy. So maybe this is something you and I will somehow catch up to Mr. Rowe on together.
If only there was a fan podcast that would do a watch video review show, and we could do references to deep cuts into Battlestar Galactica and other things. I could see a whole podcast coming out of this.
Ooh, I'm sure.
And having three people with different perspectives: one who's watched it, one who's a big fan of the history of the other parts, and the other one who's coming at it fresh and new. This would be nice. Reminds me of, what was the podcast on Babylon 5 that did the rewatch? They did five seasons, all kinds of other stuff.
The Andy, audio, I think you the audio guide to Babylon 5, yeah.
That was yeah, excellent very, very podcast. Good.
I agree. And there are other ones, too. Like, there's a Seinfeld one that I know about.
Yeah, nobody cares.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a show about nothing, and you got to do
it's
a lot of
it's a comedy. Yeah. No, it's got to be a story. That's not a story. That's a bunch of skits.
And there's one for Tolkien, too, as I recall, right, that would kind of do a read-through of everything. Anyway.
You could do a Sex in the City one, Sex in the Ether, right?
I suppose so. So think about things that are remote from yes, one another. We have another example of this, and this story about the Royal Shakespeare Company really reminded me, you know, we keep on going back to our science fiction experiences and the reactors and those sorts of things that we see. Here we have putting on a show in virtual reality, wearing mocap suits, and having folks being able to dial up and dial in and see the actors act in real time and as an audience be able to influence the show. Super cool stuff.
I'm interested and excited by this for a number of reasons. Firstly, that I studied English literature and a big fan of Shakespeare and in general. But secondly, it's been created in Portsmouth, where I grew up, where I went to school, where I grew up. I didn't go to university there, but I know the space or the area, at least, that they're talking about in Portsmouth in the UK, in the south of England, very well. And also, the event starts on my birthday. So I'm really excited about this. I hadn't really done enough research or reading about it. But I'm assuming that they still have tickets available to join and watch and interact. I'm going to definitely get involved in this.
This is really interesting. And Andy, I didn't realize you spent a lot of time in Portsmouth. I spent a very, very fun couple of weeks there at the turn of the century dealing with level 3 support problems, and I really had a good time. It's a beautiful area. It was middle of the winter. It was cold. It was dreary, and I loved it.
I went to school there, grew up not very far away from there. That's my area of the world that I'm from. So it means a lot to me. And I and Michael, you'll appreciate this yourself as a chorister, a performer. I was a young choir boy who performed at the Guildhall in Portsmouth many years ago. So, yeah.
I I got to sit in a traditional, I don't know if it's traditional, but a work Christmas party while I was there, and I had a blast. Anyway, I think this is a great idea. It's funny because listeners to the show may know that I sing with an opera company. Our show was delayed due to COVID-19 last spring, pushed into the summer, delayed again in the summer, and we're in the process of creating another edition of it to attempt. Due to work and everything else, I've backed off the role that I had, so I'm just in the chorus now. We're doing a virtual performance that we're going to release as a web series. And it's nowhere near as ambitious as this. It's going to be, you know, singing heads in boxes. But as being part of the chorus, I am luckily going to be what's called the Royal Chorus. So you only hear my voice, just like on this podcast. You will not have to see me. And I'm very happy for that.
but if we did have to see you, Michael, then maybe we could use something as cool as metahuman technology to...
Yes. Ooh,
there we go.
Yes. Matter of fact, if you could... Me virtually would look much better if he used the metahuman technology from Epic Games, right? And the Unreal Engine. This is amazing. Our friend Ian Hughes had sent a tweet our way from Jeff Kiley, I guess is how you pronounce that.
We'll go with that.
I'm stunned. The uncanny valley is really starting to disappear in this. It's still there ever so slightly, but I was unbelievably blown away, especially with, you know, the skin texture, the hair follicles, the teeth,
the breathing and the movement, you know, all these aspects.
Unbelievable. Very, very cool stuff.
Yep. So thank you, Ian, for thinking of us and sharing that with us, because that was something that made us all go, yay. And speaking of yay, but in not a nice way, we're talking about Edvard Munch's The Scream painting that is set to a Pink Floyd soundtrack that came through as well. And this is pretty cool because it's actually you're experiencing the painting and an art form, and taking a very famous painting, kind of like what we talked about recently with A Girl with a Pearl Earring and a few other things, but now animating it and making it a visual experience and an auditory one by bringing Pink Floyd into it too.
Yeah, and as Andy was kind enough to point out in our pre-show, I mean, it's an old post, but I saw this one come across the feed this past week, and I'm a huge Pink Floyd fan, and... As soon as I saw this, the song that they use from Pink Floyd, I had not really paid attention to the Great Gig in the Sky's use of just scream singing. Even though I know it, right, and I feel the song and I hear it, putting it to the scream just it blew me away in the most positive way, in the same way that, you know, a good horror movie can kind of make you feel good. Because it was just, oh, man, it was gut-wrenching, guttural, rip you to shreds. And Andy, you had a couple of interesting comments on this one, too.
Well, one thing I mentioned, as you said, was that it is an older post, but it's still, as you say, the animation, the combination with the music, just... all of it is fascinating. I'll throw in a very good friend of mine that I work with, Jessica Garson, does a lot of music shows online and does a lot of generated music, but also incorporates her own screams into her music, which is always quite fun. The one thing I wanted to actually mention, this brought to mind as I looked at the page, because of the visuals of Munch's work, was that I think this week or the beginning of end of last week, the Lego group did a review of the latest idea submissions, and they said that they have admitted a submission which is a recreation of the Starry Night picture by Van Gogh. So they're going to be making a Lego set of Starry Night. I believe the individual that created the idea in his 20s, but it's a really very nice, you know, it's another illustration of how multimedia, whether it's, you know, animation, music, physical things like Lego bricks, can create some really quite beautiful pieces.
I like the slight bit of recursion in it, right? It has the little Van Gogh minifig painting the picture on an easel and the giant picture behind it, which of course is supposed to be the actual knight he's looking at when he's painting it. But it, to me, I can just see, you know, mirrors upon mirrors recursing all the way through to infinity.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's reminding me, too, of something I had done. At least I recorded the video. I didn't actually create this world, but there was a virtual world many years ago. And I have to find the YouTube of it where you can walk up in a Van Gogh picture. You can see the train coming
active
across.
Worlds.
Yeah, active worlds. Exactly right.
Yep.
And you can walk up into the house and see the bedroom and the pictures and the other Van Gogh pictures hanging on the wall. I'll find it and make sure that's in the show notes, too.
There's actually really two great ones that they do. There's that one, and then there's another one in the Active Worlds platform that is Casablanca. You get to go to Rick's, and you walk into Rick's. It's all black and white. All the avatars turn black and white when they go in there, and you live the world of Rick's Cafe.
Everything old is new again? Kind of, sort of, yeah.
Yes, very much sort of, especially with the next article.
Oh, yeah. So look how this is all hanging together, right, guys? So we have an example here of Disney using and reusing old material for multiple reasons. And it wasn't until I saw this tweet where you could actually watch the video happening right next to one another. And you could see that Jungle Book and Winnie the Pooh, the movements of the characters are exactly the same. Michael, you were pointing out that, yes, a lot of reuse here, right? But in a special way.
Well, yeah. You know, the gut reaction when we first saw it is, well, of course, it's really, you use the rigging and you put it into your model and you run and you're done, right? But no, this is early, mid-Disney, all hand-drawn, one frame at a time graphics. So this is pure intellectual property reuse by the owner of the IP. So I thought it was fantastic. And it's hilarious because it's not just the one movie where you see this in. You see them take one movie and show where they stole it from other movies, all the pieces that they put together to make the scenes. And anyway. I won't gush anymore. I'm amazed. I love it. I hadn't thought about it until I actually physically saw it.
I think the other thing to note on this is some of the comments on the tweet that I think we might be adding to the show notes. People, you know, really respecting still, even though the animation, the movements, the, you know, overall path of the characters in some ways is similar. You know, they're still beautifully drawn, beautifully animated, beautifully hand-painted, hand-animated, you know, cartoons and stories. So if it all fits together and, you know, there's no problem with where the, you know, the movement is coming from, then why not?
Well, think about it. If you're a great storyteller, a great storyteller steals from the best and creates a new story. That is
or great,
stringing the pearls together.
Or a great software developer.
Yeah. I mean, that, why else do you go to Stack Overflow?
So another old is new again example, taking the internets by storm this week, is an attorney who's having a little bit of a conversation with a judge saying, no, I'm really an attorney. I'm not a cat.
This was everywhere this week, and you know, we record at the end of the week, so sometimes we get these stories a little bit late. My wife showed this to me from Good Morning America, right, in the morning little wake-up shows. It's been all over Twitter. It's been in traditional news stories, etc. This is hilarious. We talked about this before the show, but you know, once again, We'll talk about it now. There was another story that came out kind of similar to this one later in the week from Congress, where one of the Congress critters, as I like to call them, ended up being a upside down floating head in their Zoom meeting. My personal conspiracy theory was that it was done so they purposely could be memed. But Andy, you actually had some much more insightful understanding of what really happened.
Well, so a lot of the stories and headlines around this are a Zoom filter was applied because, you know, there is, as you'll see if you ever watch the video, it's a very prominent Zoom logo in the corner. It's a meeting on Zoom. So there's an assumption being made. It's a bit of lazy journalism. And so at a certain point this week, I think sort of midweek, people were saying, well, I can't find the Zoom filter. I want to try being this sort of sad-looking kitten. I can't find it. This is nonsense. Now, you know, you can modify your appearance, but in this case, it wasn't even something like the Snap camera that you can install as a desktop app that will overlay filters on your camera image. It's a very old machine. It's a Dell machine that came pre-installed with some software that enabled the camera to apply some fun effects. I think even in the story that we're quoting from The Verge, it mentioned that it was the attorney secretary's laptop or computer. So I remember, I'm fairly sure I bought my mother a Dell laptop or a Dell computer at some point in the past, which had some fun video effects. But we weren't using the camera very much back then. I mean, you know, we're certainly not as much as we are today, where, you know, Zoom or Hangouts, Google Meet or whatever else is, you know, ubiquitous because of pandemics and lockdown. I think there's a couple of, you know, there's definitely, as you said, Michael, in the pre-show, especially with the Senate hearing or the Senate individual, you know, there's a question of whether or not this is being done for comedic effect in order to become viral or be more noticed. This is certainly very, very funny, and I've watched it many, many times, and it's not ceased to be amused. But yeah, it's difficult.
What's interesting to me, though, is I think Michael, you may have this too, but I play with which is another the video service that allows you to apply filters and do, you know, like charts over your shoulder on the video feed, etc. And I really wanted to use it for a work meeting because I wanted to move my head up to the corner and show a chart at the same time and actually have a little bit better control or use the giant hands to point at things. And We use WebEx at works, and WebEx, the way we have it deployed, does not allow you to do that. It will not accept the inbound filters. So it's interesting.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah, I was really bummed because I really wanted to have some fun with it. But this was weeks ago when I discovered this, so it wasn't because I was a cat. I do find it, you know, in certain settings, corporate settings, legal proceedings, you may want to check your IT stack before you deploy it.
Yes, and you know, the thing I found also quite hilarious is that in almost every instance of this being shared, you've got the language in the upper left-hand corner saying that you're not allowed to record this hearing.
Which is, of course, recorded.
Which is, of course, recorded because it is way too funny. So luckily, there's not an issue with viewing it, and none of us recorded it, so therefore...
So if I recorded my screen showing this video that was recorded elsewhere, would I be in violation of that?
Well, we're not attorneys, so you'd have to check.
We don't even play one on TV.
You'll have to check with your attorney to make sure you sort that out. All right, so staying on the video theme, we have another interesting article from The Verge. This one's talking about VLC with a new interface that's coming and a web-based player.
It's more than that, right? Because VLC is the way that, at least historically on many machines, it gives you the ability to play a lot more video codecs than you might have. And if you're using something like Make MKV, right, to rip Blu-rays and things of that nature, where you want to actually show it as a Blu-ray movie with all the features, VLC can sometimes do that. I don't think its UI had changed in 15 years of me using it. Maybe not that bad, but pretty close. So it's nice to see them doing an update. And I just thought it was really interesting because it does give you that ability to watch things a little bit better. I don't really care about the web-based player, to be honest. most web streaming is going to be streamed and played on a service provided by the streamer and player. But I think it's great to see them finally upgrading the software to be a little bit more current.
So this is much more in line with people who are taking their existing Blu-rays or other physical copies, ripping them, and then having the ability to watch them off of their own network later. Is that
any video format? So it just has many, many codecs. So for example, I've got videos that I either downloaded it or recorded from content 20 years ago that will not play in QuickTime, that will not play in the iTunes media player, you know, the Apple TV thing, that don't play very well in the Windows media player, but VLC plays them fine, right? So it just gives you one content area where you can watch lots of different content formats.
Got it. Okay. So it's something I hadn't encountered before. So I was like, oh, I'm kind of curious about this.
Yeah. They've historically just really majored on, you know, universal compatibility for formats and ability to play whatever you want, almost wherever you want, without particularly spending too much time, as Michael said, on updating the look and feel of what that looks like on your system. So yeah, it definitely looks like a 15-year-old Linux app.
Yep.
It does the job. It plays whatever
does
you want.
Does it well.
But it may not be what you expect as a new user a modern user. It's exciting stuff. To be fair, this was announced at FOSDEM in 2019, which is 2 years ago from now, because FOSDEM happens in January. So it's a while ago. But it's great to see them continuing to make progress.
Yeah, I'm excited.
So talking for a moment about new technologies or new hardware in this case, apparently the Surface Duo is going to be arriving in Europe next week. So Andy, you've been using some of the Microsoft hardware these days. Is this something that you'd say is exciting and something you want to look into?
No, and the reason is... The reason is this, that whilst I'm continue to be a reborn fan of Microsoft's strategies and devices and software, the Duo is an Android device, which is not a problem. I appreciate them. They're bringing new functionality to other platforms. I think that's great. Yes, you're right. I have been using Microsoft platforms and devices increasingly. I've got a Surface laptop, which runs Windows 10. And I use a lot of their services day to day. And I think that they have a really good strategy and approach these days compared to where I came from in my mindset 20 years ago. So I'm definitely I won't say a fan, but I'm in favor of what they're doing, but I will not be jumping on top of a Surface Duo. I'm also, frankly, still unconvinced by the foldable devices in terms of, you know, dual screen foldable devices rather than laptop with a screen and a keyboard. I may well change my mind in another 5 or 10 years, but that's not where I think I am right now.
And then you can use on it VLC version 5 in 5 or 10 years. I will not spend money on this device. I do find it an interesting device. I do think from a form factor perspective, it's interesting as a foldable. No desire to buy it if someone gave it to me, I would certainly play with it. I would be very interested to see the UX changes that are driven by having a device that folds. I've seen, you know, various other concept devices over the years where the keyboard is one screen that you can then do other things on, et cetera. It looks about the size of a paperback book, which is kind of cool. I have a Paperwhite Kindle. It would kind of defeat the purpose of making it a foldable computer. But I find it interesting that the interesting thing about this story, though, is, you know, it's finally becoming available in Europe. I think it came out in the U.S. last summer.
Maybe so.
In September. In September. Yeah. But the other thing is that, you know, they're doing the international release 5 months later in combination with a massive price drop. You know, I mean,
which means they're trying to flush the content.
Right.
Yeah, they're flushing their supply lines.
Well, maybe that'll free up more room to make some more Xboxes, right?
Yeah, that's it.
Hey, we are nearly out of time, and we had one other fun thing that I encountered through my MIT newsletter, and this was just way too funny. A bunch of Canadians doing something called the Frozen Clothes Band, where they've taken clothes, soaked them,
froze them,
and then just wailed on them to create some good percussion and more.
Is this really a bunch of people? I think it's one guy. I really do. It, to me, it looks like a really good video edit with one guy, and they're just laying him into different places. And because
I think you're right. Yeah.
When I first looked at it, and this is going to come out wrong, but I'll say it because I mean this purely in a comedic sense. Instead of Blue Man Group, it looked like White Man Group. Because he was in the frozen north and everything was white and frozen. But it actually, it did remind me of Blue Man Group, you know, taking different materials and banging on them to give you different percussive sounds. And I actually enjoy Blue Man Group. So this was kind of cool.
Kind of cool. Love it.
Yes. Yeah. You caught it. So yes. I knew somebody would catch it.
I particularly enjoyed, you know, taking the clothing and then hitting it against a tree to get the, you know, nice thwack thwack sounds out of it too. That was good fun. Yep. All right. Well, team, listeners, everyone, rate us, enjoy us, share us with your friends, tell us things that you're interested in hearing more about. You can do that easily on a variety of sources. We would suggest Twitter because that way other people can see it too. And we'll look forward to getting back with you again next week. See ya.
All right. See ya.
Bye. You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming, technology, and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.